That's Oliver Nelson with Screamin' the Blues. Oliver Nelson on tenor and alto sax, Richard Williams on trumpet, Eric Dolphy, one of my favorites, on alto sax and bass clarinet, Richard Wyons on piano, George Duvivier, the great George Duvivier, on bass, and the great Roy Haynes on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lee. It is Monday, May the 13th. And yes, you might have heard a little quip I made about the menu that the Republicans have. They're cooking up for our president, Mr. Obama. Lame duck with impeaches. Preferably grilled. Grilled impeaches on the side. Well, you know, it's okay to quip about it, but it actually is a serious matter. And, of course, we've been noting the upping of the ante in the last couple of weeks. And we saw this coming way back, when under the pretext of a hearing, remember I told you it looks like a hearing and it sounds like a hearing and it is organized like a hearing, but what we were hearing in the hearing really were the beginnings of a process of voting articles of impeachment, and this weekend, actually, the word was actually used. I was stunned, but not really. It was coming. Now, this doesn't mean that the Republicans are in a position, a moral position, to do anything, although that's, of course, the way they will position themselves. Nor does it mean that the Obama administration deserves to be impeached. It is just politics. You have to understand it just as that. Don't make any greater judgments other than that. Politics being a chess game, people make moves, others make counter moves to those moves, and it's all about winning. It isn't really even about who's losing. And in that regard, in the immediate sense, it might be a political party, but it ultimately is. No matter who wins or who loses, we will have a winner or a loser. We seldom would have a draw in a situation like that. You'll have either a winner, you'll have both a winner and a loser, but in either case, you will have a huge range of constituencies affected, and that's where we need to focus our attention. It's not like the Obama administration hasn't been really asking for it. President Obama, I believe, and I've maintained, is asking for it. His administration has taken on a tone that is very disconcerting to anyone who observes the way this government is running. And though it takes on the mask of civility and order and propriety and all of that, it actually, in many cases, has been doing so many shady things that if it were not for the fact that he was the first, quote, black president, unquote, of the United States, people would be up in arms and actually calling for an impeachment of this administration. The administration has taken on the stench of a renegade operation of people who have come into positions of authority with no conscience and with their own personal agendas first. They are predators. many of them come off as predators. They're just here to just take whatever they can get. And they organize their little fiefdoms, their little circles of authority and power to deliver for themselves first. In a way, the president seems out of control of his own administration, out of touch with his own administration, and certainly out of touch with the constituencies that brought him to power. It's been building for quite some time, but it has reached the tipping point, I believe. And now he has little wiggle room because he has turned off so many people for so many reasons. They've begun to feel betrayed by this administration. When Barack Obama was running as the true insurgent, and this happened, we saw that with Jesse Jackson as well. I remind you that I always say about Jesse Jackson, when he first ran in 1984 as a true insurgent, he ran with the fervor of someone coming in to do the people's business, and so was able to motivate a wide range of constituencies that did not have working relationships with each other before, did not have a coalition going with anybody before, but managed, with respect to his candidacy, to overcome all those historic barriers to dealing with each other in a coalition effort, which was remarkable. It was inspiring. And the assumption was that Jackson was true. He was going to be a true soldier. Of course, we know what happened there. It took only 4 years for Jesse Jackson to put his constituencies up on the auction block in exchange for goodies for himself. He sold everybody down the river. And just usurped the rights to this thing called the Rainbow Coalition, which he still has. It's a convenient thing to put on his letterhead as he continues his privatization of the Rainbow Coalition for his sole benefit. And we see the same pattern with Barack Obama. Sad as it is, but it's true. When Barack Obama was running as a true insurgent, a kind of a marvel, actually, a political marvel, WizKid, out of nowhere, had fashioned this machine, this juggernaut, that turned the science of political science on its head and did things that nobody had ever seen before and amassed incredible amounts of support from all these pockets that had remained dormant or disaffected. They suddenly came to life. They suddenly decided to move with this president, move behind him, support him. But make no mistake, his initial constituency, because he did have something of a political life before running for president, he was in the state senate in Chicago, and then went to the U.S. Senate in the blink of an eye. And in one term of the U.S. Senate, catapulted himself into the White House. Remarkable. Remarkable. But it isn't so much that he is remarkable. He became remarkable because his constituencies delivered that for him. They made it possible for him to be remarkable. They invested heavily in him because he talked that talk. He talked the elect me and life will be better talk. Give me your vote and see me deliver for you talk. I'll come through for you talk. I'll change things and make life a little bit more bearable talk. And they said, okay. And miracle of miracles, we had a landslide. And in the first term, the Republicans were watching to see how this young man of color performs. And they gave him a little bit of slack because they would look really bad. They would look trenchantly racist to not do so. So they let him have a few wins. He had a few wins. And within his first 100 days, he was a beaver. He got a lot of little things done. Delivered this, delivered that, was fine. But of course, coming in after George Bush, just about anything would have been an improvement. But just the same, it looked good. And little by little, we saw the veneer peel away to reveal a wolf in sheep's clothing. The liberal Barack Obama that people thought they elected is actually a conservative. And I'm being polite. The idea that he was going to be the hope for all the people, he changed that pretty fast. He said, wait. I'm here for the middle class. Started talking class talk now. You know, I'm for the middle class, which means anybody listening to that means, well, that nixes is black folks. I think there are only 3 black people who are in the middle class, as he defines it. It certainly eliminated the bulk of Latinos as well. So he's a middle class man. And he is picking up from where Bill Clinton left off. And that's not a good thing. Because Bill Clinton was not the gift that most people think he was and still is. His administration was lethal to the interests of poor and working people, although he got away with it. Why? Because, you know, he's a white guy who was as close to a black president as we ever had. He played the saxophone and everything. But Bill Clinton set in motion a number of initiatives that Barack Obama committed himself philosophically and ideologically to getting done. And you know, it's so ironic that there was no real backlash about it. People were being very patient and, in fact, embarrassed about being loud about it. Nobody wanted to say anything because they didn't want to jeopardize this historic moment. He is, after all, a history-making president. And who wants to be the person to bring down a history-making president? Nobody. But soon we see even the Congressional Black Caucus is upset. Why? The man isn't talking to them. Barack Obama isn't talking to the black political leaders. He's not talking to the Latino political leaders. He's not talking to the so-called Progressive Caucus. In fact, he's not talking to many people at all, except those in corporate America. He is of service to them. He's of service to the people who are wealthy. And all of the priority items, He suddenly just does not know what they are. The priority items that were enumerated, and people said, here are the things you need to pay attention to, especially now that you are reelected. We got through the first 4 years. Now let's really push for these things in your next 4 years. The number one thing everybody said is jobs. The economy. It is still the economy. It is still about jobs. And the vast majority of people who put you in the White House are concerned about it because they are deeply affected by this. They are unemployed. And they are unemployed in record numbers since the 1920s. The unemployment rate for African Americans is 3 times plus that of the national average. And as we heard on this very program, that has been the case, a steady case since the 1950s. It hasn't moved, it hasn't changed. That dynamic is permanent. And that is not including people who just give up. There's no point to even asking about whether they should go find a job because it just isn't there. He says no. Yes, he agrees there's going to be a jobs program. But this is year 5, and it hasn't yet materialized. The banks were bailed out. The automobile industry was bailed out. A whole bunch of people in Wall Street got bailed out. But no employment plan. No employment plan whatsoever. And conveniently, other things decided to supersede the basic issue of employment. Immigration. Oh, that's a big one. Same-sex marriage. Oh, that's a big one. Yes, these are things that we need to do right away. Well, obviously, you tackle the employment first. Why? The strategy is sensible. It brings everybody together because everybody is looking for employment, gays and straights alike, immigrants and non-immigrants alike. Everybody's looking for jobs. And you sink your concentration on that, and you develop all the other things around that. But everybody wants to find a job that pays their bills. That's not your priority. You're talking gun control. And you're talking gun control in all of these initiatives that superseded the job issue. They're all bifurcated. You would think that immigration is only about Mexicans. So you have immigration, basically you nailed the immigration issue right on Mexicans. So everybody has the idea that immigration is about Mexicans. And that's the administration's doing. So in other words, you commit a political error by racializing the immigration issue so that the entire country, which is run by race-based quotas, it still has not changed, now interprets immigration to be a Mexican issue. Because you have hopes of building the, quote, Hispanic vote. So you turn an immigration issue, an across-the-board issue, by the way, just in case you're doubting me, just last week, a poll in Ireland found that 1 in 4 people from Ireland is either leaving Ireland or thinking of leaving Ireland or has already left Ireland. But immigration in the United States suddenly is a Mexican problem. And nobody has done that better than Barack Obama. He has racialized immigration. Gun control. Now, there's another thing. He has nailed that to white suburbs. It's a gun issue identified with that constituency, which is the white suburban group, which he hopes to build upon, because the deal is to build the Democratic Party. So he made a promise to Nancy Pelosi that she will once again return to her ordained, divinely ordained position as leader in the House. So the gun control issue is not a straight across the board issue. None other than the president has racialized the issue, because it does not include the gun issue that we just saw this past weekend in Louisiana. People's trying to celebrate Mother's Day, and some nuts decided it's a good time to shoot people, and 19 people are injured. But that kind of attention to that community, and this was a huge issue in our community for decades, but to address that problem would require a sophisticated response. And because you don't want to lump in the urban blacks and Latinos with the suburban whites and their children who require interventive care, you decide to cut out the part that you can't deal with or won't deal with, and you make now the gun issue is a white suburban issue. And that's what this president has decided to do. He is racializing and compartmentalizing things, because now the broad coalition that formed itself in support of him, he is now compartmentalizing. He's undoing his own magic. And he doesn't even see it. So, your jobs program, it doesn't exist. But it does exist because you're running around talking about the fact that you want to cultivate jobs in the high-tech areas. And in the immigration part, you will supplement that by making all these visas available for people who are gifted in that area. In other words, you have racialized it again. Because his administration has shut down 4,000 schools already, more than 90% of them in black communities. Public schools, they're done with. Because the intent was, and still is, to shift the, quote, burden of public education away from the government and usher in a real shift to the charter schools movement, which is why he has as his education secretary, Arne Duncan, who comes out of Chicago, and whose job it is to shut down the public school education system. So this president literally has shown that he is a predator, a political predator. And therefore, he ought to be treated like that, because he's not consulting anybody or those people he talks to. He chooses them very, very carefully. And most often it is on the basis of exclusion, the politics of exclusion. He's not talking to anybody. Grassroots? What are those people? What do they matter? When I am the president for the middle class. And so the Republicans have read that, in effect, he's one of them. But he's the wrong kind of one of them, so they're gonna oppose him. There isn't really a wide divide ideologically between where Barack Obama stands and where the Republicans stand. There really isn't. There's a frightening similarity in their positions. Ideologically, Barack Obama has taken positions that would never have been tolerated by any other president that we have had. What if George Bush had said, we are going to have a new system of care and you must buy insurance. You have to buy insurance from some bank or the other. And that is his beginning of universal health care, means you have to buy insurance from the insurance companies. Now, a simple matter is, there is no guarantee that once you have bought your insurance, that you could actually afford the health care. They don't care about that. They care that you buy the insurance. Now, that we would associate as a with the Republican Party, wouldn't we? We'd say that that's a kind of George Bush kind of thinking. Well, actually, it is in a way, because Obamacare is really a Romney-type program that started out with Bill Clinton. That's frightening, isn't it? And we have over the weekend the Republicans saying they are going after the Secretary of Health, Ms. Sebelius, because in pushing Obamacare, she has reached out to insurance companies to fund the effort to promote the healthcare program, which they say Lamar Alexander, senator, is saying that this smacks of the Iran-Contra type. This is where they're going. Smacks of the Iran-Contra type deal. And we now need a select committee to investigate why this is happening. I.e., impeachment. Why is this administration doing such crooked things? They want to know. We heard impeachment intoned again over the weekend by all kinds of people now. They're very comfortable with the word because we still have no clear, they say, they have no clear indication that they know all there is to know about Benghazi. It's a point. Now, people may be saying they're straining the point, but that's what politicians do when they recognize that they have an advantage. They will make the best of it. And they will put this administration on the ropes. And from now until the end, the next 3.5 years, his administration will be answering all kinds of legal requests and papers and legal demands until he's done. We talked about drones. The McClatchy news enterprise, national news people, found that the president has lied. Lied about the use of drones. This is not the kind of thing one associates with a president coming in and saying he's going to change things. And then he becomes like the others, the slithery type. So they want an investigation of that. They want an investigation of the bailout. How is it that taxpayer money, billions, hundreds of billions of taxpayer money, went to bail out banks that still have not met and fulfilled their mandates to people who are foreclosing on their properties and still are not doing what they need to do as part of the conditions and terms of which they accepted the bailouts? They're breaking the law. They're banksters breaking the law all over the place. And our Justice Department has decided prosecution. In fact, the U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, has said it is difficult to prosecute banks. He actually said in testimony they are too big to prosecute. It's a challenge that is just overwhelming. They're too big to prosecute. So what do? Instead, we are seeking settlements. And the banks are laughing all the way to their banks. They're laughing. They could do whatever they want to do. And yeah, here's a couple of million or billion dollars. We pay you $1.2 billion. We've made a couple of hundreds of billions of profit. We give you that, and we will not admit guilt on any instance. And here, take a couple of billion, get lost, and we'll figure the matter settled. And the government says, okay, no problem. Unbelievable. This president and his administration are hostile. They started out that way. They soon became extremely hostile to Congress because they believe they have no reason to account to anybody. The same administration that says it will insist, the president insisted that his administration will be distinguishable from all others by the nature of its transparency. Oh, really? Really? Transparency, you say? That's interesting. Because all around people are saying this president and his administration are not at all transparent. They're fighting every effort for people to know what's going on. Under the rubric of executive privilege, the president is actually engaging in legislative initiative, thinking he is so smart that he can do an end run around Congress and the House. And if you get legislatively what he wants by use of executive privilege and executive order. So this comes because he supposedly was schooled in constitutional law at Harvard, so he's a smart guy. He knows how to outwit these folks. He could get things done without them even knowing, and even if they know, he has done an end run anyway. And it will take a long time before they could undo that. And this is the kind of renegade behavior that we've been seeing from a man who insists that he's following procedure, following everything, doing everything by the book, and his administration is transparent. Again, over the weekend, the discovery that the IRS was literally targeting conservative groups and Tea Party groups and 501c3 groups that were deemed to be anti-government, in other words, anti his administration. This is a man who believes in democracy. soldiers are dying every day in all parts of the world in service of this democracy that the president says he believes in. And he issued a statement today saying, if it is true, and the IRS actually has already admitted it is true, but he says today, if it is true, and of course you will have to look into it, then it's an outrageous thing, he says. Well, this administration has been committing outrage after outrage after outrage. And simply because he gets a pass at being the first African American, as they say, president, and nobody wants to play racial politics, although that's what he's been playing all along. He's been playing racial politics. And let me say this. Racial politics is unavoidable. I understand that. And people should understand that. We live in a race-based society. It was organized that way. It was reinforced by law that way. So race-based politics is inevitable if you come in as a real reformer. If you come in as a real reformer to turn race-based politics on its head and to get some kind of inroad into leveling the playing field, you have to engage in race-based politics. But you don't do it in a way that suggests that the same constituencies that have historically been marginalized by reason of race, that you further abuse them by using them as leverage to get what you want for others. And you pretend that you actually are fighting for everybody. Every president, from Lincoln on, every president has had to deal with race politics. This is how the society was founded. This is the eternal struggle to undo the recklessness of centuries gone by, of creating this anomaly that sees practically no end to this. But certainly we had a good shot. If we had a president who had, say, the moral conviction and the compassion and dedication of a Harold Washington. And you can fix some things, because everything we're talking about, every measure we're talking about, in some way impacts and further underscores the disparity of race in the United States. Everything. So, the president has to gear up for the very real possibility that there will be impeachment proceedings. All these hearings, the call for select committees to be formed, the insistence of further probing issues that were supposedly settled some time ago, all of these are indications that the Republicans have located his Achilles heel. And it's ironic, because his Achilles heel is the fact that the same constituencies that brought him to power are now disaffected. They're disaffected. And so Barack Obama has eroded some of his own protection by betraying the interests of his constituencies, specifically African Americans and Latinos, but specifically African Americans. That is the irony of it all. I watch with interest how he is going to respond. This is politics, so I'm not emotional about it. I observe it for what it is. The tragedy is that here we are again with an opportunity, a pristine opportunity, to really make some kind of beneficial change if the leader was so inclined. But he is not inclined. And to hold on to the illusion that Barack Obama has as a priority the progress of the black community, well, then you are on some kind of drug. You're losing your senses. You're losing your ability to make sense of the reality that is confronting you. I will stop now, and we'll take this break. Come back to your questions and comments right after this at 888-874-4888. Patrice Lead, you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. The number is 888-874-4888. This week I'll be making quite a few observations because there's a lot to chat about, a lot of things that developed that we haven't really gotten into, but that say a lot about the Obama administration and the direction of this president, which is extremely troubling, I must say. You're on the air, Alan from Brooklyn. Hello, Alan.
Oh, this is Jay Utrecht.
Oh, hello, Jay.
Hey, listen, Utrecht, I have a friend of mine that's listening to the program right now, and he's a staunch supporter of Barack Obama, and he has heard your show a number of times, and me and him always go back and forwards in debate over Obama. He doesn't want to call in, but he would really like for you to explain what is your biggest problem with Obama based on the fact that Obama is doing such a good job under an administration that is constantly being attacked by the Republican Party. And I try to tell them that, you know, these parties are basically the same. They lockstep with one another. They just have a little bit of different ideology on the way they go about doing things. But they're basically on the same page. And for some reason, he don't get it. So maybe you could give him a quick minute or two on why you have such great issues with Obama, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, look, I've explained my position, and I respect his position if he sees that the president is doing a good job. And it would be important to, I think, to simply note that we have a difference of opinion. I'm looking at the objective facts that suggest that there has been no movement, practically no movement forward for the extremely distressed people of this country. And in this administration, there is every right to expect that the president should be responding to these constituencies very differently from the way he is. And he, in fact, has made it very clear He stops at the middle class. Everybody else is awash. It's up to you. You do what you have to do. This is not your government. He is dedicated. He has said it. He's a president of the middle class. And ironically, he has chosen alliances with the corporate upper class in order to see to the so-called interests of the middle class. The folks with no class, we're on our own. John from Brooklyn, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to speak about impeachment. Yeah, apparently the Republicans are trying to use Benghazi in this respect, and they may have some grounds and may not. There's a lot of stuff going on there, especially with the hearings last week, you know, where it came out, you know, the administration knew all along that was a terrorist attack, and then they shifted the dialogue to make it sound like it was a video that was that caused it, what they knew all along, right from day one, that it was a terrorist attack. There's also more to it that Ambassador Stevens may have been gun-running, you know, Stinger missiles to Syria. Some say up to 20,000 Stinger missiles to Al-Qaeda in Syria, which is, you know, a pretty serious charge. But
our Secretary of State, under oath, said she knew nothing about that. Secretary of State, our former Secretary of State, Hillary Rodham Clinton, was stunned and surprised that anybody would suggest that that was what that compound was used for.
She may have perjured herself. Let's put it that way. Also, the compound was also used for renditions. There was a CIA annex right there, and they were doing renditions over there also. So there's a lot of shady activity. But apparently, you know, Stevens was knee-deep in this, or had over his head in it. And pretty much he lost his head over it, basically, because some say he was whacked because he knew too much about what was going on. And they just let him, you know, die because he knew too much. And so this is where the conversation is going at this point.
Sure. And they will mine this Benghazi incident until the president's term is up. They're not letting go of this at all. And they, in this regard, they get a twofer. One, they get to frustrate the president from actually moving forward with anything because they'll just tie him up and really make him a lame duck president who can't get anything done at all legislatively. And they may be successful at making a dent in any presidential ambition that Hillary Clinton has. Remember when that was going on, when the hearings were going on, I predicted that this is not at all over. When she declared with the arrogance, you know, it's get over it already. You know, there are four dead people. They're already dead. You know, let's move on. Oh, yeah. Wonderful. They'll show you how to move on. This is how it's done politically.
Yeah, well, there's more to the story. There's also the stand down orders. You know, there was, you know, there was special forces in Tripoli that were wanting to go over, and they were told to stand down. There were special forces in the CIA annex who wanted to go. They were told to stand down. There was a General Hamm, who was head of AFRICOM, former head of AFRICOM, who had a force who wanted to go in with the help of Admiral Guyer, and they were relieved of their command as this was going on, you know, to prevent them from going in. And this is all coming from Panetta, basically stopped the whole thing from happening, from the rescue.
We've covered all this. What I'm saying is all of this, they're taking their time. The Republicans have nothing to lose with taking time.
A lot of this is coming up right now. It's just a lot of these details are dribbling out, and, you know, there's going to be hearings, and there's going to be drip, 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 and until, like I said, you're right, you know, they're going to tie his hands, basically.
Yeah, and Hillary Clinton's, too. It's a waterboarding of a different sort. Thanks a lot. Thank you so much, John, for calling.
Okay.
Alan, you're on the air. Alan?
Yes, hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
Eutrice, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you, Alan.
Okay.
How are you?
do you remember when he was, when President Obama was nominated and he made that speech in the park about change and there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the park? And he really made everybody feel like this is it. And you used a word in your talk earlier in the show, and you used the word betrayal. And with everything that's going on, he betrayed us. He smiles. He tells the people what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And transparency and change and all these words and slogans. You know what the end story is with whatever happens, whether he's impeached or what have you? He and his wife and his two daughters are going to have the same kind of life as Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and their children. And, you know, it's just so disheartening to see the world, what's happening in the world. And I hope you don't ask me what if I have a solution, because you know I never have a solution for anything. But it's a real slap down. And he'll get up and he'll talk seriously and he'll blame this one and he'll blame that one. But, you know, the thing that's going, you know, with all the banking and the money and the politics and the pollution and the fracking, whatever you want to talk about, just the fact that they slipped in and one of the bills where he could use drones against the citizens of this country. I mean, and what happened in Boston, the cops, they didn't look like police. They looked like military people getting ready to attack some people in Iraq. And he'll just smile and show his teeth. And he believes like we're all... I get lost for words when I speak to you, Eutrice, but I hope you could get the gist of what I'm trying to say.
I do. I get the sense of frustration. I mean, even the president's own people should say, it is quite insulting, I must say, to hear the president in the presence of people who are not, quote, middle class, say over and over, and his administration people, they say the same thing, that this president is paying attention to the middle class. Well, why didn't you just run on a campaign that you were there to help the middle class? I'd understand that. But a whole bunch of lower class people have voted for you and put you in office. Well, yeah. Thanks so much, Alan. Good to hear from you. We're running out of time, I'm afraid. We will come back to these discussions tomorrow because it really is a very troubling moment, and we have to look at the point of departure here for this administration under the guise that it is doing the right thing. It's doing a lot of really wrong things, and expecting people to absolve it or to support it simply because he is, quote, liberal and, quote, progressive, unquote. That's not true. That's not true at all. I want to thank you for the many, many emails I got in support of having Dr. Horn back here soon. He was quite an impression with us, so he'll be back shortly. And with these remarks, please do pay attention to the news. We'll come back to this tomorrow as well. Thanks a lot for listening. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. Thank you.